Welcome to the Gridiron Show. We are taping this on a Wednesday afternoon in a baking British Isles, which is very unusual. I'm Ollie Connolly, your host, the editor of Gridiron, the proprietor of the Read Optional newsletter, and I am joined on the line by Irish Michael, our producer, who is here to co-host the show today. Michael, how are you?
Irish Michael, I have to say, folks, it's not as warm where I am in comparison to Ollie at all, but a pleasure, Ollie, to be on today.
All right, we're going to go through it. Initially, we thought we'd look at teams who could do kind of a Bengals-y thing, where it would be a team that came from nowhere and kind of had a shot at either making the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, whatever it was. As I went through the teams, I was like, I'm not quite sure there's anyone who really fits that model unless there's a weird thing that happens in Jacksonville. That exact model of, you know, the glorious young quarterback puts the team on his back, basically. So what we'll do is we'll go through the teams who didn't make the playoffs last year, who have a shot at winning the whole thing. By the end of this, there's some really interesting teams. We kind of picked three each, but my picks are the pick teams I don't actually think will do this, except for maybe one. So we'll just go through it and navigate through them. Is there anything going through this initially that jumped out to you? I would say for me, the teams who on paper, you know, we've just done the annual. So as I've said before, I have so many takes on all these teams and I'm so in the weeds on what I think these teams will be at a time in the year when everyone else is on holiday, essentially, that I'm all fired up about it. And as I went through and I really like obviously what the Ravens have put together. Everyone likes what the Ravens have put together. And as you go through, you go, what, the Broncos, Russell Wilson's a new addition, the Colts, the Matt Ryan situation. These teams are all in the AFC. The AFC is so unbelievably stacked. And I know we all know this. It goes 8 QBs deep, right? And really, we should be saying, well, who is the NFC team? Because that's such a small slither of teams, Rams, Bucks, Packers, basically, unless you love the Cardinals. And yet I still kept coming back to these AFC teams being so well constructed and thinking they've got a shot, but it's just a murderer's row once you get to the AFC playoffs.
The AFC is probably the most realistic thing to the Avengers that we're ever going to have this year. It's just insane. Yeah, like you mentioned, one team there, the Broncos, and I will probably talk about the Chargers as well. That AFC West, for example, someone's going to miss out. At least one team will miss out there. And who is going to miss out? It's been a season where multiple teams have made multiple moves and it's really shifted the plates in a lot of ones. I like your selections that you're going to talk about today. I'm confident for two or three of mine. We'll talk about the Jaguars later on, I guess.
The thing with these AFC teams is that all the offseason winners are the ones you love, but you're going to have to bump someone out. Mm. And the one who would be the standout, who could you knock out, would maybe even be the Bengals, which is a bit silly because if that defense, which they kind of scotch taped together last year, and all those guys had career years essentially outside of Trey Hendrickson, and they've redone the offensive line, which is the big deal, right? And yeah, that's probably the team you could see maybe drop out. The Titans, possibly. That was the number one seed in the AFC last year. I forgot that seven times writing the Titans passage in the thing. I was like, oh shit, yeah. They were the number one seed in the AFC. I don't think they're very good. So it's a strange one. I guess we'll start with the Ravens. Who the big thing with them, obviously, it's they're an unusual were out last year. They have a chance this year because they're quite clearly one of the best teams overall in the AFC. They had so many health issues and injury issues last season. They overhaul the defense, essentially. Lamar Jackson will be back and we hope can play a full season. And if Lamar plays a full season, as good as the AFC North could be, Watson obviously suspension pending, I do think that as an overall team is slightly better than the Bengals.
I was at the Ravens-Packers game last year, and whenever I was researching ahead of, you know, obviously the magazine and this podcast and the new season, you almost forget this Ravens team started 8-3 last season and they were not lucky at all with injuries. I like the way they're set up because if you look at the rest of the division, like, okay, there's a whole thing with Deshaun Watson there in Cleveland. You said it previously there, the Bengals could have a Super Bowl hangover. The Steelers, okay, anyone could be an upgrade on a whatever age Ben Roethlisberger or quarterback, and they've got the talent there. But you feel as if with the, like adding Marcus Williams, adding Morgan Moses to start off, the Ravens really have a chance of going for this division. They're definitely in a better place than they were last season. The one if for me, Ollie, is, you know, they didn't really rely on wide receivers in the draft. Are they going to rely on Mark Andrews heavily? A guy that had 9 receiving touchdowns last year. You know, okay, they've got Bateman there as well. Do they look at a wide receiver now? Maybe a veteran wide receiver and try and get someone in? there is that heavy reliance, and you've got that shadow as well of Lamar Jackson and his contract situation. I enjoyed watching Huntley play. I just hope, Ollie, they don't get to the point now where they're sitting and they're a point down and they go for two again, because I just can't take it anymore. And actually sitting in Baltimore watching that was heart-wrenching. But I think they're definitely up there for that division. At the minute, I've got them personally finishing second. I've got the Bengals winning the North, but who knows what's going to happen?
It's interesting. A lot rests on two players on that team. Williams, you mentioned there, who is the best free safety in the league. I've been writing about him today, actually, for a piece that should run tomorrow on the Read Optional. And I will say this a lot through this podcast, because I've been writing a lot about these teams recently, because these are the most interesting teams in the league right now. The ones who didn't make the dance last year, who could win the whole thing the upcoming year. Williams is so important for everything they want to do defensively, which is night and day different, most likely, than what Wink Martindale did last year. Now, the new DC, Mike McDonald, was on the staff before he went to Michigan, but he's just more of a bland, let the players play guy than Wink Martindale was. And Martindale was just undercut by injuries at the end, obviously. But Marcus Williams is, when you have a dominant free safety, which is what he is, that is the biggest force multiplier of any position in the league, including dominant interior pass rush, which obviously transforms everyone's defense too, because you can just constrict so much. You allow the second safety to play top down and drive from depth really early in the rep, which if you go back through the Saints tape last year, which is what I've been doing to write for tomorrow, their numbers, the tape, it is insane how active they are. One at the line of scrimmage, and then second with having the two deep safety shell, which everyone runs now, and that second guy, Malcolm Jenkins, flying down so early in the rep to really cloud things up. Most teams can't get away with doing it that actively and that quickly because their free safety isn't good enough. So that has a chance to transform everything for them on defense and just make everyone better. And then you mentioned Bateman, who, I'll say it again, I wrote about this last week, right, in a mailbag piece for the Read Optional, more looking at how difficult it is for the Ravens to build a true passing attack because of how unique the run game is. And you'd almost wish they had a different run game to run a true modern passing game to unlock everything in the passing game. But that would be silly because they have the best run game in the NFL basically of the last 25 years. It is so outrageously dominant that it would be daft to throw that thing away. What they need more than anything is Bateman to be a one-on-one killer, mostly on the backside of plays where the defense has to set more resources to him. And by doing that, everything else will kind of clean itself up. I'm not sure. I mean, we did a podcast earlier in the offseason with a great Ravens writer discussing this, and all the pieces are in there for Bateman to be really good. And when he came back from the injury by the end of the year, as he was hitting his stride, Lamar was out of the team, right? So we haven't really seen them have a ton of chemistry or connection together, but I'm bullish on him. You know, if they could get Odell, obviously I'd do that deal, but I don't think this is a team. I've seen a lot of writing about like them losing Hollywood Brown is somehow a loss. I just don't see that at all. What this needs is Bateman to be at least an above average, typical perimeter receiver. And if that happens, given how special everything else is, then they just have the perfect formula as a Super Bowl team, which is they can play ahead, they can play from behind, and that's what you need.
It just seems like they're almost, for me, maybe hedging their bets a little bit by having Andrews and Bateman there and not having that sort of pure backup to an extent. You've got maybe James Proche second there as the WR2 on the team. And I don't know, man, like if history says anything for this Ravens team is you're going to get some sort of injuries. Every team is going to have an issue with injuries throughout the season. And if one of those guys, God forbid, was to go down, you sort of wonder. Bateman needs to really prove he can work on his consistency. Can he get open in Greg Roman's scheme? In a scheme that can really lack sort of creative concepts.
Fry your brain. Yeah.
it's interesting. I think the one thing I'll say for like the Ravens, Ollie, like the GM, DaCosta, is probably top two, top three in the league. And the way that he has set that organization up, you feel as if they can attack any situation. I think they should go out and get Odell. Do I think Odell Beckham will go to Baltimore? That remains to be seen. But they're in a really good position. But a big disappointment last year, Ollie, the way that ended up them.
The Odell one is interesting. I think he would do that for a year with Lamar. I think him and Lamar are really close. It's whether the Ravens will do it. You know, Connor Rohr had a great piece in Sports Illustrated last week, which flagging something I hadn't spotted from afar, because obviously everything I do is nerdy and X's and O's, and I often forget the salary cap. The way they've deployed their cap is they just will not pay any of the perimeter positions. And you go through it, you're like, it makes a ton of sense. They've never, or not, this team they've built is they've paid a premium for all the non-premium positions. They pay a tight end, they draft a center, they draft a safety, they sign a safety in free agency, right? They don't give Orlando Brown the left tackle money. They don't give big money to a wide receiver. They'd rather trade Hollywood Brown away. They've not given big money to a cornerback. They have said, we want to be the best at every other position in the league. We're going to get top three, top five guys at all of the other positions. And then we've got this special fella who will make the premium positions better. Now, one is the safety on one side of the ball, obviously, and then Lamar on the other side of the ball. That is a really fascinating way to construct your team. So I do wonder if even them, even an ego play of like, we think we've cracked this special formula, because no one else is doing that in the league. No one is paying safeties. No one is paying centers. They want to pay the left tackle. They want to pay the wide receiver, obviously. Even the ego of, we don't need Odell because we're doing it this cool, different way. And it's fascinating. And I understand what you're saying about depth and injury. What is interesting is where they're really crucial outside of Williams and Jackson. I actually like some of the understudies. I don't think there's that much of a decline, even where they're really good in the interior of the offensive line. I don't think there's that much of a decline from the first spot to the second spot. The only problem is the health of all those secondary pieces, because that's where they were decimated last year. That's where it became a horror show. And Mike McDonald coming in, his entire playbook is built around, we are running bump and run coverage all the time. And if you don't have the depth of cornerback, because those guys go down all the time throughout a season, everyone knows that, then you're in trouble. So I would, even if I was them, canvas the corner market, see who's available in preseason for some salary cap dump type trades.
If they can just get to the 11th of September and not have injuries like Gus Edwards or Marcus Peters for the whole season already, that's probably a good thing for them. I know you were massively in on Kyle Hamilton in the draft, and they had a really, really good draft. The fact they got Hamilton, Lindebaum, and David Ojabo were the first three picks that they had in the draft. It's unbelievable. So it's going to be an interesting season. And I, for one, am here for the Lamar Jackson contract talk, his agent talk, which, or his non-existent agent, which starts right now. Maybe me or you could represent him at some point.
Oh, please. I mean, I saw that report this week, and it was accurate, or not report, I should say, opinion. Was it Jacina Anderson? I can't remember. I think many people in the media, for some reason, have made fun of the no agent, but really for him now, it is walking in with the Watson contract saying, add a zero somewhere or add 10 to one of these numbers and let's get it done. Deshaun Watson's agent, as grubby as that situation is and is gross from every angle and every level, did the negotiation for Lamar Jackson, which is, hey, I've not been accused of all this disgusting behavior. Can I have 10 more million on this fully guaranteed contract too? Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, must have been weeping the second that contract went down. And the thing for them is, someone will give him that contract. So it's not even a negotiation. Miami would love to give him that contract tomorrow. And I know there's the franchise tags, and the Ravens fans get all upset about the franchise tag. Lamar Jackson is not playing on a franchise tag. Franchise quarterbacks do not play on franchise tags, right? They'll sit out a season if they have to. So negotiation's done. Give him that $245 million fully guaranteed contract, I say.
I guess with the cap exploding over the next few years, or expected to heavily increase, it's something that will happen quickly. But look, it could be something we could be talking about pre-draft next year, Ollie. And who knows, after the offseason that we've had so far, anything could happen.
So the next team on our list is the Colts. Another fascinating one. Another season of a new quarterback, Matt Ryan. You go through what they've done, and I've still, for the life of me, do not get the Rock Ya-Sin trade for Yannick Ngakoue. I'll never get over that. And I don't get the Gus Bradley thing. No offense to Gus Bradley. His defenses have not been good for a long, long, long time. He's been left behind, essentially. And all the talk out of the Colts is, no, he's going to keep a lot of the Eberflus stuff, and he's going to adapt this year. And maybe he does, and maybe that, you know, can spark something for them on defense, but I just don't see it necessarily with this team.
I think you almost have to go back a second. When researching the Colts over the last few weeks and months, I still think back to that game in Jacksonville and think, wow, you know, Frank Reich is living in borrowed time here. No, but seriously, I still can't believe that happened. And the fact that they went 9-8 last year and missed the playoffs with the team that they have and the defense that they now have is intriguing. The draft process, Ollie, where they didn't make a selection until the second round and Matt Ryan comes in. I guess the question is, and I know you talked about Gus Bradley there, but even looking at the offense from my sort of point first off, can Matt Ryan come in at his age and with his experience? And, well, apparently he's quickly sort of got to know the offense, got to know the franchise, got to know his team. He's impressed so far in Indianapolis. can the Colts, first off, win that division? A really interesting division, because we talked about Tennessee. Ryan Tannehill, we don't know what's going to happen this year in terms of his performance. He's under pressure. If Matt Ryan can sort of gel that offense together quickly, and if they make a good start, it's interesting. In 2021, they lost four out of the first five games. In 2018, they lost five out of the first six games. So it would be interesting to see how Matt Ryan gets on. But if it works on the offense, this team could go far, because the defense, Ollie, is nuts. I mean, like Darius Leonard, Stephen Gilmore, Kenny Moore, Quiddy Pay. It's the players that they've brought in over the last couple of years on both sides of the ball is just unreal if it works.
The thing that's tough for them, I take your point, the Matt Ryan thing, I mean, that is a pretty easy to learn offense anyway. Mm. I'm sure he'll have it all down. And what they run, everything's out of his hand really quickly. That suits him really well. He was unbelievable last year surrounded by a tire fire in Atlanta. It was insane how good he was, and was not given any credit for just taking the beating he took and playing as well as he did. So getting him in a ball out of your hand quick system makes a ton of sense. What is going to be tricky for them? All that they do is predicated on the run game, right? It's everything is an action flowing off the run game. They were so dominant with the run game last year. They finished first in EPA in the league, which is just a measure of efficiency, basically, per play, by a factor of three to the team that finished second, right? The gulf from the second team, the gulf from them to the Seahawks in second was the same as the gulf from the Seahawks to the 12th team in the league. That's how much better they were than the second best running attack by efficiency and by value in the NFL. That is nuts. And that is not replicable. You cannot do that year on year. That just doesn't happen in the sport ever. Not even Derrick Henry, as valuable as he is, has ever done that, being so dominant by that factor over multiple seasons. And maybe I think with the talent they have, they will at least be a top three rushing attack by efficiency and value next season, which is great. And what you need is Ryan then to elevate the other aspects of the game that Carson Wentz could not do to offset that. And all that sounds well, all that sounds good. And really all you need to do is win double digit games and finish ahead of the Titans. This isn't like the other divisions in the AFC, right? It's just head to head, them versus the Titans, maybe a frisky Jags team. That's just about it. And if you can beat them once and win 10, 11 games, you're in the playoffs. The thing they need desperately is a second receiver somewhere to elevate. That offense is not going to do the yeoman's work by itself to spring receivers to allow Matt Ryan to play on time on every play. They need someone other than Pittman, who's a borderline star, to elevate so that when it's really tight and it's second and 10 and it's third and medium and it's go time, someone else can get off man coverage one-on-one. And I'm looking around and I'm just not seeing who that player is going to be.
It's an awkward situation where you could maybe bring a veteran in. You mentioned there about Jonathan Taylor and in terms of the rushing attempts that team had last year. This could be a year where he breaks 2,000 yards rushing, like easily. What, 1,800 last year? I remember watching the Patriots game, I think it was, and literally you sort of just knew what play was coming before it happened. So now they actually have the option of getting the ball downfield and you're not wondering what Carson Wentz is going to do every 5 minutes. The potential's there. Gus Bradley, he was with the Chargers and then with the Raiders. Do you think there's going to be an issue short-term, Ollie, with maybe him coming in and getting used to this defense? Or do you think it's that stacked that he should be okay? I mean, well, if you said you weren't a fan of the move.
It's a tough one because he runs such a specific style of defense, which is that old Seattle match three system, basically, which it just does not work in the NFL anymore because people figured out how to attack it. And that's why everyone's moved to this Vic Fangio, Brandon Staley, two deep Tampa two based system, cover seven, essentially. He has made noises like he's going to adapt to that because you just cannot keep running what he's been running over the last couple of years. That is pretty hard to do. I always admire a coach who says, I'll learn what you guys did because it seems pretty successful, as opposed to saying we're running what, you know, a doctrinaire who says we're running what I run because I'm smarter than everyone else in the room. And there's crossover from all these schemes. This is the NFL. They all run about 12 coverages. That's the NFL. They don't run a lot of complex stuff in the NFL, really. So we'll see. I don't see the organic pass rush unless Pay has a monster season. And you could see it last year, but that leap from, I think he had 38, 39 pressures last year, so that 40 mark, which is okay to good, to the 80 mark, which is the elite mark, which is a Myles Garrett, a Khalil Mack. That's where you have a four-man get off and go dominant pass rush, which I think this group, because I think it's pretty weak on the back end. I don't love this group on the back end. I'm not quite sure about Gilmore. Bringing in Gilmore and bringing in Ngakoue, who was with Gus Bradley in Las Vegas, is every single red flag allure that he wants to run, what he's been running the last few years. Bump and run, press corner, cover three guy, and his guy who plays the Leo role, which is his kind of like what he thinks is his fancy role up front for Yannick Ngakoue, who was dreadful last year in Vegas. That concerns me mightily, and I do wonder if he can fuse those two ideas together, what they did before, what he wants to do, whether he'll just pick one. That is the massive, I think, wait and see. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a pretty clear drop-off from them. I also wouldn't be stunned, you know, if they were just as good, if not better.
I didn't want to say it for the first team, but obviously the Colts 9-8, and in the way that they didn't make the playoffs last year, and in the way in which their owner was quite vocal on social media, what's your thoughts if this team doesn't make the playoffs, do you think Frank Reich survives?
No, Frank Reich's done, which is unfortunate because I think what he's, you know, his job, and I get he's the head coach, and this is where it gets tough. I think his main skill as a coach, right, is designing an offense. I don't even necessarily think he's the best play caller. Designing an offense is excellent, right? And they've never been able to quite get him the right quarterback. Maybe this is the right guy. So you almost feel like, well, the most thing you would want in a, for a team starting in 2022, as you've seen from all the hires, is a great schema of offense, right? That's what they're all chasing. They're all chasing their own McVay. So it's almost like, well, why would we get rid of one of the good ones? That almost makes no sense. It's the job of the head coach. So it's like, why did he choose Gus Bradley? That is a really odd choice for what that defense was last year. So maybe he's had a decision in his head like, they were so passive last year, and were passive. The whole Eberflus philosophy revolves around being passive, essentially. Maybe he does want to be more active, and he said, I'll go get one of these guys, and maybe he thinks the league will swing back around to that style, and he'll be ahead of it somehow. But that's one where it gets to, man, he's really good at the thing he does, but the job of the head coach is to help with everything, and I don't think necessarily picking that coordinator was a good move. And if you're the owner, and they don't make it again, this guy is super impulsive, I imagine it will be a wrap, because they can't keep changing the quarterback, right? That's not going to happen.
Especially when, like, I'd say Matt Ryan's looking at maybe 2 or 3 years. I'm really intrigued just generally to see what's going to happen in Indy. At the end of the day, them challenger for that division is going to push the Titans. It's going to be great to watch. You're talking about the McVay coaching tree.
Mm-hmm.
The next team is literally trying to do that.
Oh, nice. I like, look at that. Nice. Pro. Yeah. Well, who is the next team? Is it the Vikings?
The Vikings, 8-9 last season. Talked about watching the Packers play against Baltimore in Baltimore. Unfortunately, Ollie had the pleasure of watching quarterback purgatory and Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings the following night. Where do we start here? Do you genuinely think that Kevin O'Connell could come in and take this team from 8-9 to making the playoffs? I guess in the NFC, anything goes this season.
Yeah, I think if you look at one of these teams to say they'll almost certainly be in the playoffs, I think Minnesota's about it. I do really like that Lions team, though, outside of the quarterback. So that makes it tough when you start doing the maths of like how many teams can get in and what have you. The thing that he's got going in, right, is they had two asks over the offseason, which was tear this whole thing down and reboot it and move on from Cousins and all that stuff, or kind of put all the chips back in for one final ride, be it with Zimmer or obviously they moved on. But they've kind of straddled this middle line, which is they put all the resources into kind of reworking the defense. It was so old and creaky at the end of the Zimmer stuff. It was really mundane, which is so unlike Zimmer at the end of what he was doing. And they just went and got as many athletes as possible on defense, young, fresh faces who can zoom around and hit really hard. That's basically the profile of guy they went and got in the offseason. And then they bring in O'Connell, who's part of this Rams staff, who it's still really unsure what his exact job was with the Rams. Apparently he designed and called third down, which is interesting because it would be unusual for someone of McVay's control freak nature to give up the money down. That would be unorthodox, but maybe he did. I don't know. Wasn't in the meeting rooms. He is here, right, to squeeze out 5% out of what is probably the most stacked skill position room in the NFC. I mean, we can quibble between them and the Rams, but it does not get better than Jefferson, Thielen, Osborne, Cook, if he's available. And then Cousins was really good last year. The thing with Cousins is every time that he plays on national TV, he shits the bed and it sours the milk on every other game. It's like, he must be always still Kirk Cousins. It's like, no, every other week he was unbelievable last year. I mean, those guys are wide open, so it makes life easy, but when he plays on national TV, he's terrible. So I don't know that they have a massive boom or bust thing for me, because I don't know what O'Connell's going to run. That's a real big open question. Does he run the earlier McVay stuff? Does he run what they ran last year in Indy when he was more involved, which was very specific to that those guys they had on that roster? So we can't really do that. He's got a great tight end and fullback in Minnesota, so you probably want to run more of that stuff. It's there's so many question marks, but you can see a path where you answer all those things right, where O'Connell gets a little bit of extra percentage points out. The defense has all these new young faces and some veterans who can kind of make the whole thing fit together, and they have a great run and they get back into the playoffs. I think that's the one I can see the easiest of all these teams.
Kevin O'Connell, Wes Phillips coming from the Rams over to the Vikings. Kirk Cousins is like Andy Dalton in the microwave for me. He's like quarterback purgatory. He's 59, 59, and 2 in the league, Ollie. It's like,
is that true?
Yeah.
It's funny.
I'll double check that, but that is, I mean, it's the most bland record that you're going to get. I guess the hope there is they almost do what they've done with Matthew Stafford in LA, and they try and do it with Kirk Cousins. I'm right in thinking Kirk Cousins is going into a contract year next year.
Yeah.
So the time is now in that sense for the Vikings. But I do agree, if you can utilize Justin Jefferson, he's led the league with over 3,000 receiving yards since 2020. If you can utilize guys like that, obviously now KJ Osborne as well, there, the team has got serious potential. I feel for them because of the division they're in. Obviously, any team is going to get looked at every week in detail, but when you're playing the Packers, it's a difficult division to be in. They actually open up against the Packers as well, so it's going to be difficult for them. But I like it. I like the new GM. I can't pronounce his name. Kwesi Adofo Mensah. He's had obviously 2 years as the vice president of football operations in Cleveland. He's probably happy he's got out of there now. I'd say he's ready for this role. So
he's a super nerd. It's an intriguing year. Yeah, he's one of those computer super nerds, which I enjoy. It's really interesting to see them try to play these two timelines at once, where they don't want to commit to another Cousins era. They probably want to move on after this year. But then there's a chance here that he could play out of his mind with all those pieces around him. And then what do you do? That's an open question. And the big thing is, obviously, as we said at the top, the defense. How do those rookies fit in? Can, you know, everyone gets excited around the draft about what these guys can be, but it's very rare that you start a season with like three rookies on a unit, unless it's pass catches essentially that come, you know, rotate in and out. So to think all of them would start would be a bit strange. They get Danielle Hunter back, one of the best pass rushers in the league. They signed Za'Darius Smith after all the stuff that went on with him in Baltimore. So I think that's a team that will have a wild year in which they like go into Lambeau and win, and then they just crap the bed at home to the Lions. They will be typical Vikings football, but I do think they're good enough to at least make the post. I mean, everyone makes the playoffs now, so I think they'll at least make the playoffs.
I think they're lucky that they're in the NFC.
Yes.
I personally think even if they get as far as like the wild card or the divisional and Kirk Cousins does ball out, I'd be very much against giving him a big race. What's he on, $35 million guaranteed at the minute of the year?
Yeah, No, he's a guy who you never want to pay, but you're not sure who to move on to. That's just the Kirk Cousins dilemma. You're like, do we really want to get into that rookie draft? What if those guys are terrible? Kirk is still at least okay. And it genuinely was excellent last year with all those pieces. He just was terrible in the biggest of spots. But that's how you win a Super Bowl in the biggest spots. You can't be someone who's just a flat track bully and not deliver when it's not crunching time.
I love how we haven't even mentioned Dalvin Cook.
I don't know what's going on with him in the suspension. So it seems like, I forget who they signed last week. They signed someone last week, right? Which is a running back, which is a pretty clear indication that they, was it Donta Foreman? I can't remember. It's a pretty clear indication they expect some kind of suspension, whether it's half a season or full season. I don't know, it'll be a precedent with Deshaun Watson. I don't know what's going to happen there. So it's a tough one to even get into because you just have no idea who's going to be on the field. Who's up next?
The Broncos are up next. They've had an interesting offseason.
Here we go. Yeah, obviously. And the big thing, I mean, I won't belabor this point because I've discussed it on here. I've written about it a ton, which is this Wilson-Hackett dynamic, which is really everything, right? It's like if those guys can gel quickly, the thing the Broncos can't have, because Hackett runs that specific thing and because Wilson runs his specific thing and we don't know which one they're going to go with yet or a blend of the two. And typically you'd say do a blend of the two, right? Find your own voice over the course of a season. And this is a team where you just look at them and say they redid the defense a little bit. Obviously, the offense will be so different with Russell Wilson back there than Drew Lock. You would say, okay, if they can just keep in the race by the second half, this is a classic second half of the season team. That would be the kind of cliche you would go to. And yet you cannot be a second half of the season team in the AFC West. If you get curb stomped in the first 4 weeks, it is a wrap, right?
It's that schedule's difficult. Now, I don't have it in front of me, but the last 7 or 8 weeks is brutal. And this is one thing. The team is going from 4 or 5 years of no playoffs. They've got a new owner. The Walton family's buying the team, subject to approval. There's all this stuff going on, and boom, Russell Wilson comes in, and suddenly the Peyton Manning era spotlights back on the team. They've got 5 or 6 late games. I think there's a lot of pressure on this team, and I think there's a lot of what-ifs, and I'm not going to even start in Russell Wilson. For me, it's Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy was drafted with the promise of being an incredible wide receiver in this league. You know, heading to Canton before even his first game, almost. I'm only joking. But he didn't score a touchdown last year, and he's already now got to the point where he's talking about, oh, this is going to be my year. I can feel it. Justin Simmons is backing him up. You know, it's the buck really stops. When you're bringing in, like, you know, all these youthful coaches, Nathaniel Hackett, I wish I had a quarter of his energy. The buck stops this season. And if they can't get over the line in that, like, forget about the division. They should be trying to go to Arrowhead and win. At the end of the day, they should be expecting to with Russell Wilson, the quarterback. They've got those 2 games against the Raiders, 2 against the Chargers, 2 against the Chiefs. For that team and for any team in the AFC West, they have to win those games if they want to get to the playoffs, never mind win the AFC West. I personally think Ollie Nolofan's going to be a massive miss for that team. 4 touchdowns last year. Albert Okwuegbunam needs to try and improve that. They brought in Greg Dulcich. He's probably the biggest miss. But look, Russell Wilson, I think the excuses have to stop now for all the Broncos fans that have been given off for years about we're a player away. They're probably not, to be honest with you.
No, it's weird. I mean, I think they'll just be a juggernaut on offense. They are so loaded. Sutton, Patrick, you mentioned Jeudy. I think they will be dynamite on offense. Now, whether they are with this dynamic of detail between Hackett and Wilson, whether they're kind of an every drive type offense the first year, I don't imagine they will be. But will they be a team that can just score points in gluts when they have the right plan, it's clicking? I think that they have an offense where they can go to anywhere and drop 45. That's what they have. And it's a very nice feeling to walk into a season knowing you can walk in anywhere and drop 45. The defensively is the question to me, because outside of Simmons, I don't think there's a real game breaker. Now, like everyone, I know Randy Gregory is a monster, right? Speed to power menace. You want that guy on your team. How much will he play? Will he play? When he plays, his pressure rate, I think, is like 12.5%, which is in the uber category of rock star pass rushes, right? Will he be available? Then you get Bradley Chubb, who didn't play much of last year, right? And then when he came back, was terrible. He had, what, 0 sacks? He had no sacks, right?
I think I'm nearly certain it's under one anyway.
Yeah, it was 0 sacks. I think it was 11 pressures in 7 games. Dreadful. That is a dreadful figure. And then you see with him just checking out, right? He comes back from an injury. He's not played the full season. The team isn't very good. Vaughn's gone, and he just checked out, and his run defense was terrible. So I don't know if you can just magically engage him to say, hey, now we're a team who's going to play ahead, and you can just tee off and go with Randy. You can see how that dynamic could be excellent. But if those guys, one of them isn't a true blue super duper star every single week, and there's no evidence that they can do that every single week, because one's never around, and the other guy is just not being the player he was supposed to be coming into the league, I don't think that defense can be good enough without Fangio sprinkling magic dust, because he's Vic Fangio over everything, to keep pace with that offense. So it's funny, because they were for 4 years, like you said, they just got the quarterback, and then they kind of timeline themselves out to now. Well, they kind of need more than the quarterback now. I still think that there's issues on defense.
Yeah, it makes you think, why didn't they do that in 2016 or 2017 or 2018 or 2019? The team ranked 3rd in points allowed a season ago. And you're right about, you know, in terms of talking about that defense, since Miller, and Miller's long gone now. He was a leader, fan favorite, obviously. Shelby Harris was a fan favorite. He was included in that deal to Seattle. Oh, Seattle. I love how we haven't talked about the Seahawks yet. I wonder why. You're going to have guys like maybe Alex Singleton or maybe Jonas Griffith come in. I think a lot of fans are hoping that Alex Singleton can maybe become that, if not a leader, a fan favorite, and have Justin Simmons become an integral leader in that team. I don't know. Look at the last 3 weeks for the Broncos. Rams Christmas Day, Chiefs, and the last game of the season is against the Chargers. For that division, that AFC West schedule is incredible. And something tells me we'll be sitting, Ollie, on Sunday night on week 18 talking about who's losing their job on the Monday, because one of those 4 teams, well, Andy Reid's not going to lose his job. Brandon Staley's not going to lose his job. I feel like we're already going to be talking about the Raiders or the Broncos in week 18 about what happened. Seriously, and it's crazy if one of them do miss out.
The thing that they have going for them ahead of everyone else, the Broncos, that is they have a truly elite cornerback. And I'm looking at the rest of the teams in my head right now. I'm trying to think, Jarius Ward left. JC Jackson is a certain type of cornerback. I'm not sure he's necessarily your press and trail, stick him anywhere, elite guy. Although I do love him as a player. He is the, I'll say this, he's the best if you get him in the right setup and system. Patrick Surtain is a different breed of player. That is the one that you want. That's the one who's the 6'1", but he looks like he's 6'6", moves better than everyone else. And it's basically Marshawn Lattimore when he was at the true apex of his powers 3 years ago, right? Of you just plant him on anyone and then everyone else has a good time. And if you have a shutdown press corner on one side of the field and Justin Simmons, who is the rangiest guy basically in the league at center field, right? Then now you're covering both sides of the field pretty comfortably. No one else in that division has that at both safety and corner. The closest would be Derwin, Nazir, and then obviously JC Jackson with the Chargers, but they just don't play defense that way. And a lot of those guys outside of JC are hurt regularly. So that for them going into the season in that loaded division, they have something to their advantage that no one else has in the division where they've all been chasing receivers and paying receivers.
It's going to be intriguing. And I feel like we always need to talk about the Chargers now because you've said those names.
Yeah,
We haven't talked about Garrett Bowles, who knows what's going to happen. He's been having trouble in training camp over the last few weeks. The Broncos are probably the one team in this where I think they're boom or bust. Genuinely, I think I completely agree with what you're saying about that offense and what could happen, but they really could go be boom or bust. I don't think like a lot of those players aren't used to the pressure, which comes with about six late games. We'll see what happens. Chargers, very interesting though.
Yeah, well, just lastly on the Broncos, so I can get my prediction out, I guess, if that's what we're doing. I stand by this thing that I don't think they will gel that Hackett Wilson situation right away. I think that will take some time. And as you mentioned, they kind of have this strange opening schedule where they need it to gel and it might not. And then it becomes a just monster at the time when you would want it to. So I just think that it's too many moving pieces in year one. It's very rare that a quarterback of that level moves in year one and it's that good. I know that Stafford did it, but that was a kind of unusual situation. Russell Wilson isn't walking into a team that has Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey on the other side of the ball. You know, he's not walking into a team that has Cooper Kupp and Andrew Whitworth at left tackle. So that team was legitimately a quarterback away in a division that was winnable. This team, I think, not so much.
Hell of a start as well in Seattle. That's their cup final. That's their Super Bowl. One for them. So it couldn't, I mean, if he goes in Seattle and balls out, I think the whole league will take notice, but they should be sitting 3-0 after 3 weeks.
All right, then let's do the Chargers. The darlings of the offseason. They might have the best quarterback in the NFL. I'd say maybe third right now, but you can make a case for him being the very best. And they did what they had to do, right, which is something everyone's said ad nauseum now for years and years and years. You get the quarterback on the rookie contract, and you go and throw all of the money and assets on making everything around him so strong whilst he's on that market inefficiency deal. He is by far the top market inefficiency in the league. To have a like game-breaking, truly elite, could be the very best in the league quarterback on a rookie scale deal is outrageous. And the big question mark will be, can Brandon Staley's defense finally rise to match what Justin Herbert can do basically on his own on offense?
Going back on the Colts a second, looking at the Chargers in week 18, I still can't believe that happened. Like how they didn't get in. Spoke to Tom Telesco last month and was really impressed on his outlook for this team, his opinion on Justin Herbert and the way that he sees his team going forward. Like, you know, for example, getting JC Jackson, 5 years, $80-odd million, Austin Johnson, Josh Harris, Troy Reader, Jared Everett. It's not just Herbert, but it's Staley's progression of this team. Their red zone scoring percentage rose by nearly 10 points last year. It's going to be intriguing to see how they upgrade this team. They've obviously put the upgrades for the players, but it's now that sort of that evolution of Justin Herbert. Can he, you know, make himself more of a leader in this team and even better himself to the standard which he needs to be going into his next year in this league? Because they do need to get over the line in certain games. If they go to Mile High, if they go to Arrowhead, can they get over the line? I felt last season watching them, especially when they were playing at home in SoFi, that there was times where you just, like, I love watching Justin Herbert, but there's times where you felt they just needed that next level. I think they're close. If it's almost a little bit like the Broncos, Ollie, if they can just find that way of getting around it and letting it all gel, they can really challenge for the West. There's no reason when you're bringing in guys like Calvin Noy, Bryce Callahan, where you can't challenge. So it's definitely a team that's going to be exciting to watch this season.
Yeah, the big thing for them last year, I mean, one, they had this weird mid-season, like midlife crisis where they didn't know what they wanted to do on offense. They made it really constricted. It's like, hey, guys, that guy's Justin Herbert. Could we maybe let him throw the ball down the field every once in a while? He's really, really special. But the right side of their line was a sinkhole, right? So it's just like that they were panicked about him taking a giant shot because Storm Norton was terrible, basically. The big thing is the defense. I mean, obviously last year, the worst run defense in the league, essentially. I was looking at some numbers today where, you know, they have this light box theory that we've discussed on here a lot, where they purposely lighten the box so that they ask you to, you know, they invite you to run the ball. And the way you set up the light box, you just kind of torpedo the middle of the line of scrimmage and you make the ball roll off the table. And then everyone from the second and third level rallies to the ball is essentially the theory. You invite the run to shut down the run. That theory works when you have Aaron Donald and all the guys Brandon Staley had with the Rams. That theory is not as good when those guys aren't your team. Now, he went out and got Joseph Day, who was the anchor of that defense when he was in LA. They obviously signed Khalil Mack. They've tried to make upgrades there. And what's different now is, you know, they were in even contest last year with this massive, massive issue up front. Whereas this season, I imagine they'll be it. More ahead in games, and they've built a defense now to play ahead, which is having both from Mac obviously rush the passer, bringing in Jackson allows them to be a lot more malleable in the coverage department. What Staley did last season was, and what Staley's done throughout his career, is pick one thing week to week and lean all the way into it. I remember Coach Vass, I did an interview with him for this podcast, where they ran one coverage against the Chiefs last season 19 times in a row. You do not see that in the NFL. It's basically, we think this is the plan. We're going to do it all the time. That's what Brandon Staley does. He doesn't run a lot of different things within a single game. Adding Jackson to what they typically do will give him just a wider coverage menu where there are times when you have to adjust in a game and say, okay, our plan's not working. So I just like what they've done in terms of pairing Justin Herbert with a specific style of defense. And then obviously they've done good work trying to get other pieces around him on offense too. So like they should be right now and for the entirety of Justin Herbert's career, essentially in championship or failure type mode. And I know it's a lot of pressure to put on a team and a third year guy, but they're that good. There's no reason why they shouldn't be going into the season expecting to win the whole thing. There's nothing there that's overtly missing unless JC Jackson becomes terrible outside of New England, which is unlikely. So it's pressure, and I know they're the preseason darlings and the offseason darlings, and those teams usually end up coming up well short, and this team could still come up short because you got to play in the playoffs to know what it's like to play in the playoffs, right? That's a typical thing, is you do like the Rams did, you get in, you lose, you get to the Super Bowl, you lose, and then you finally punch through. But they should be in the mindset of not being like one of these teams where they could have like a Cinderella run. It's that they should be expecting, I think, to win it all.
Yeah, that's the expectations, that win the West and go and win it all. It goes through LA as far as they're concerned. You know, the thing about their run game now, it's more diverse. They've got better linebackers, better corners. And you've mentioned the players that they brought in. It's there for them. It's as sort of what I said there, can Herbert take it to the next level? And it makes me wonder again, why the hell did Russell Wilson come into the AFC West when you've got this situation in LA?
Is a mad
Kansas
one.
City and Vegas.
And I know that the Broncos claimed they never spoke to Aaron Rodgers. I'm not having that. I get that the claim would be we never spoke to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers' intermediaries, I'm sure, let teams know who he would maybe be interested in moving when he was having his Mopathon for the last 24 months. I imagine he sat there and looked and said, there's no way I'm going into that thing. And I hear all backs. Clancy was big on this one about how great athletes don't think like that. You're thinking like a writer and not like a great athlete. I'm pretty sure Aaron Rodgers was thinking like, yeah, mate, that seems really hard when I get to just hammer the Bears and Lions four times a year for the next three seasons, basically.
I almost feel bad before we finish off even bringing this up, because we've talked about such team, like, for example, the Chargers there. They're in a great position. Do we mention the Jaguars?
It's worthwhile. I mean, they're the closest comparison, as I said at the very top, to what would be the Bengals of doing it. I think it's a fascinating team. You just remove all the shite of the crap culture of the Urban Meyer era, and you drop in someone who is a football professional in Doug Peterson, right? And as much as Peterson had kind of like ups and downs with the Eagles, obviously winning a Super Bowl was a big up, but there was a lot of questionable stuff that happened too. He's a really creative outside the box thinker who I don't think you can pigeonhole as saying, oh, they did all that RPO stuff with the Eagles and, you know, that's what they're going to run. I mean, this was Andy Reid's lieutenant for all of Andy Reid's career, basically. So all that stuff Reid has built, which is basically 25 years of little bits and pieces to build this monster he's built with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, which is just things taken from every playbook in the league. Peterson has all that too. So I think we're going to see some really cool, quick, similar to what we described with the Colts type offense, plus this kind of deep vertical passing game, which would get the most out of Trevor Lawrence. And I love the defense as a concept that they just said, fuck it, get as many athletes as possible. We don't care where they play. They all play the same position. They all play all the invaluable positions, but we're going to go get those guys, similar to the Ravens, we said, right? Go and get the best invaluable pieces and we'll pay for the premier pieces when those guys become available. So it's fascinating. I still think they are obviously a couple of years away. And when you say the structure of our defense is going to be one of these moving, free-flowing Cardinals type ones, but you're relying on five rookies to do that for you. Now that's, you don't win games in the NFL doing that. Those guys need some seasoning before they're able to roam and move like those great Vikings defenses did of a few years ago. So we'll see, but I think they will be really, really exciting and fun this year, even if they don't win games.
The Titans and the Colts on alert there as well. Look, obviously, Doug Peterson's an upgrade on Urban Meyer. I think anyone is at this point after everything that happened last year. You could probably have a movie about that or write a book about the whole thing. I like what they've done. You know, you bring in Brandon Scherff. He brings a sort of veteran presence to that team. Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, Evan Engram. They, you know, it's more younger targets that they can throw the ball to. I guess it's going to come down, and you can talk about the draft picks as well. But Trevor Lawrence didn't have an incredible first year. Disappointing first year. He needs to now try and find himself in the second season, develop as a quarterback and really take it from there. But I think the reality is, Ollie, you know, the Titans and the Colts are better teams. They are. But if you get a bit of luck, if you don't have any injuries, if you get a bit of the run of the mill every few weeks and win some games, they can pick it up. Who knows what's going to happen, especially in that division. They're probably a while off yet, but look, if Tannehill struggles, if Derrick Henry gets injured, if Matt Ryan goes down, you never know what could happen with Jacksonville. It could be Blake Bortles in 2017 all over again. Who knows?
It's a tough one because, you know, they had the first pick in the draft. They take Walker, which was an admittance that they think that offensive line is good enough. And I'm not so sure. Now, maybe for the long term, I'm just not a Cam Robinson guy. They gave him that big extension, which is just bizarre. He didn't earn that extension. I take that back. Every player plays in the NFL and can make as much money as they want. I'm happy for all of them. But his play was not commensurate with the contract they handed out to him in a hard cap sport. That's the cleanest way I can probably put it. And I look at that and say, they don't have enough juice on offense. Sy's been making this point throughout the offseason too. They don't have ballers. They don't. Christian Kirk is a shifty and out guy. Travis Etienne is one of the quickest players who's ever played football, but he had a bad injury last season. And we have no idea what he's going to look like returning this year. And outside of that, they've got some real slow guys playing outside essentially. So that sounds like a get the ball, rip it out, get the ball, rip it out. And we're moving 6-7 yards at a time, which is what Doug Peterson likes to do. So that kind of makes some sense. They just don't have these game-breaking burners to go and score you a touchdown from your own red zone, essentially, which you need to have splash points and explosive plays to win in the NFL. And if they weren't going to go and chase that, or that wasn't organically on the team, like they hadn't gone and got that in free agency, like when they went and got Kirk, you need time then. You need time to try and spring guys open through play design. That's where I'm like, man, I wish they just take one of those tackles. I like Trayvon Walker. Like I said, I love what they're doing with that defense. And that was a move, I think, with year 4 and 5 of Lawrence in mind. Let's get that defense figured out and slowly we can add some speed for Trevor next offseason. I think that's their long-term game plan. If they wanted to have a Bengals type run this year, they needed to go and get one of those tackles.
I guess the thing about Doug Peterson as well is he does get the most out of his quarterbacks. So by getting him into that, and he's got the experience, he's won a Super Bowl before, maybe he could be that guy that helps Trevor Lawrence get to that next level. I do agree with you. I feel like they're missing a couple of pieces, and it just seems as if they could maybe fill that there. They could go up a level. What's the one team from what we've talked about that you think can make the playoffs? Like, if you had to pick one team
that can make the play, I think the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers should be representing the AFC in the Super Bowl based on the talent on the roster.
Are you calling it now? LA part, you know,
LA. I'll go for it. But you know, it's funny when I was going through the I was editing the annual last week and going through it, and Neil Reynolds has all his predictions in there, and I'm going through it, and I went back to the Rams page like four times because it's always, you know, it becomes like day class A to pick the Rams because they're so expected to win it. And it's almost like a super team put together where those teams never usually win it all, though they did last season. And I'm just looking through it and going like, God, they are so unbelievably stacked. It is unfair. The commissioner should make a ruling that they're not allowed to bring Odell back, even if Odell wants to. They should not be allowed to be involved with any of these discussions from Domokung Su. They should not be allowed anyone else. In fact, they should only be allowed to dress like 40 players a game because they are unfairly stacked at every other position. They are outrageous. So, I mean, would the NFL want anything more as they move all their media operations to LA and they sanction all the, you know, they screw over San Diego to give this dodgy team to LA that doesn't want them? Yeah, an LA Super Bowl. Yeah, I can get down with that more this year than I could last year. Yeah,
I feel like I'm about to clip this up in about 9 months time. Like, do you remember we called this? You've convinced me in the Chargers. Something I just don't know about the Ravens. I don't know about the Ravens. I don't know what it is, but time will tell. Time will tell.
I love that Ravens team. All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Gridiron Show. Make sure you go and check everything out. We talked about a bunch of stuff that's being written on this episode. All that stuff will be in the podcast description below. Give us ratings, rankings, sharings, all that stuff. We really appreciate it. Michael, thank you for doing this.
Thanks, man.